Sri Yukteswar said, who the Babaji was a guru, he said, if you do not invite God to be your summer guest, he will not come in the winter time of your life. So in other words, when things are moving nicely, when you've, you know, everything is, seems to be in order, and it's the summertime of your life is blossoming, everything is working, and there seems to be no trouble, and everything is beautiful, fragrant. You're inviting God into your life then. You're getting up and you're saying, oh God, you know, save me, help me. Or you're getting up, om, 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 and you're saying, God, I've been saying om for 20 years, it doesn't feel any different. In fact, maybe it feels worse. You're just doing it. Then in the wintertime of your life, God comes. But if you ignore God during the summertime of your life, God's not going to be your winter guest because of the sincerity. So also the regiment and just the routine instills this sincerity because you're making the body do it. You know? And the body is the most obstinate part of our being. Okay? So does that kind of help, that answer?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, so any other questions?
Well, I would follow what Dan said. What follows that is that the only thing we really have to give is our life.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to say, oh Lord, you know, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Because look at Jesus. He said that. But as we spoke earlier, just prior to saying, O Lord, into thy hands I commend my spirit, he said, O God, why hast thou forsaken me? He felt that dark night of the soul where he didn't even experience anything that was a comfort God. And he was who he was. So it's that, it's, they say, it's the night is darkest just before the dawn. So it's a little bit, it's not recommended for all, and even for those who it is recommended, they say, you be careful for just saying, all you have to say is, oh Lord, I give my life to you, because two things will happen. One, you'll be insincere, and God will just ignore you, or God will create all the obstacles and all the suffering, so you, he'll make you mean it. You know, he'll make you mean it. There's this a great prayer, which, you know, we talked about ways to pray and ways to kind of approach God, and maybe catch God off guard, or maybe, you know, somehow catch the heart of God. It's a wonderful hymn. There's an old man who's in the Indian scriptures, and he wrote this hymn to the Divine Mother. And it's kind of a story, and it goes somewhat like this. He was an awful man in his life, and now he's at the end of his life and really regretful for how he's acted, and he knew, man, I'm going to hell. I mean, it's over. So he says to the Divine Mother, okay, Mother, Divine Mother, I hold the trophy. We spoke about this earlier. I hold the trophy. I'm the greatest sinner. I'm the most fallen. No one is even going to contend with me. I hold the trophy. I am the worst. Now you, on the other hand, O Divine Mother, you're the savior of the fallen. Now, my reputation, I'm not in danger because I know I'm the most sinful. So everything's fine with me. But you, on the other hand, if you don't save me, that means your reputation is in jeopardy because you're the savior of the fallen. If you don't come and save me, then, you know, you're going to lose all of this high regard that everyone has for you. So he just ends the prayer by just saying, just think it over. Just think it over. Whatever you feel you want to do, but I just want to remind you. So there, what it really conveys is we have the right to complain to God. Because, yes, as you said, when the world is just screaming at us, then we've earned the right to scream back at God. And this is why Paramahansa Yogananda says, you take heaven by storm. You pray to God like artillery shells, where you're just exploding your prayers in the face of God, one after the other after the other. And finally, the Divine Mother, of course, who's the embodiment of peace, she'll say, enough already. Okay, have your peace. Just leave me alone. So, I mean, this, again, this is real approach. This reminds me of a beautiful story that there was a man who was very devoted to God, but he wanted Sri Krishna, the Lord Sri Krishna, to appear before him physically. So he goes to a guru, a great master who has a reputation for having this happen, and he said, show me what to do. So the great master says, okay, you get this murti or this statue of Sri Krishna, and you do this form of meditation, these mantras, and you do this for about 6 months, make these offerings, and Sri Krishna will appear. And so he did it, and he did it, and he did it. And then he went to Mysore in India where they have the finest sandalwood and offered, nothing happened. And so he figured, well, nothing's wrong with him, of course. He said it was all some defect in the god. And so what he did was he realized, okay, maybe not Sri Krishna's not real. Maybe Lord Rama is real. And I just had the wrong god. I'm doing everything right after all. You know, we blow ourselves up. So he took the murti of Sri Krishna and he put it literally in the garbage can, in a bin, in the corner of his little puja room. And his puja room was kind of down below in a basement. He had one little window. It was really hot. And so he said, okay, I'm finished with Sri Krishna. Now someone else told him, Sri Rama is the Lord. He'll appear to you. After all, Rama, Sita, Lakshman, Hanuman, Dharma, you do everything right, they'll appear. And so he got an image of Sri Rama and he put it there. And then he started doing the Rama mantra, the Rama puja, the Rama meditation, all this. And then he finally got out his wonderful Mysore sandalwood. It was a Sri Ram Navami day. It was really special. He figured Lord's about to appear. And so he takes the incense and he waves it in front of Lord Rama and he puts it there and then he waits. Lord's going to appear. He knows it. But it's really hot, so he's got the window of his puja room open. And so the wind is blowing, coming in, and taking the incense, the smoke of the incense, and it's blowing it away from Sri Rama's face and literally blowing it down toward the dustbin where Sri Krishna is. And so he said, he looked at the situation. He said, no, nothing doing. He gets up from his puja room and he goes into his bathroom and he gets some cotton and he makes these little cotton balls and he goes to the Sri Krishna image, which is in the bin, and he literally puts cotton in the nose. Puts cotton in the nose of the murti. He says, you're not going to smell this incense. I tried you for 6 months. This is for Sri Rama. So he puts the cotton in the nose of the murti and says, no, you're not getting it. As soon as he did that, and he said, none for you, Sri Krishna appears fully, fully, gloriously. Radha is there. Krishna is there. It's just, he's live and he's living in beauty and grace. Then the man finally composes himself and says, I don't get it. For 6 months, I gave you my mind and heart. Then finally, I put you in the dustbin, and then I go to the trouble of like blocking your nose up so you won't smell the incense. Why are you appearing? And Sri Krishna says, that act of putting the cotton in my nose, that was the first time you really treated me like I was real. Because you realized you didn't want the smoke. And because you approached me as I was real, I had to appear to you. So this is the idea. We're trying to somehow develop this certainty, this reality. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's also important to develop aspiration. You know, a cry. You have to cry like a child. If you want God in your life, you have to cry like a child for God.
Right. Well, what you're talking about, of course, is developing yearning, true yearning for God.
Mumuksha.
Yes. So there it is. Again, there's it's a difficult thing because we're talking about yearning is a movement of the heart. And for me in the early days, even though I was in an ashram doing worship of images that were demonstrating life, they were like moving and miracles were happening, still this dryness was there. There was no yearning. There was none of this real, like, yes, there was awe, but usually it was just fear. Because I was the pujari, I said, God, I made a mistake, you know, and God, you know, growled at me. And literally it happened once. I did worship of Rama, Sita, Lakshman, Hanuman, and these are beautiful images. One time, I was distracted, thinking about, you know, because I also had other duties in the monastery, and these were metal images, five metal, and it was gold-plated, and we had little jewels. It was costume jewelry, and you'd take a little beeswax and soften it up and put it on the setting, and put a setting here, or things to put jewels on. and it was part of the dressing. Then you sit down, and then you do all the mental worship. Well, I was awful plenty distracted, and I was thinking about something, you know, totally, like, stupid. And being distracted, I was just putting an earless ear setting on Sri Sita's ear, and I was distracted, and I just slipped when I tried to press it, and it went across her chin. And it was almost like it scratched it, but it really, like, it didn't scratch it, but it kind of went against her chin. At that moment, Hanuman, who was just down below, I literally heard, like I heard this growl, and I looked, and, like, he was alive. And believe me, I never was distracted again. But the idea was that happened, and now I have this fear, but I never had this yearning and reverence until Ananda Mai Ma, one time, she just touched me and gave it. But so how do you develop this yearning? You know, not too many people are going to be in a situation where they scratch the Devi. So it's...
Or no, they scratch the Devi.
Yeah, it's what you do. And you, the sincerity develops first from the yearning. So you have a regimented schedule, and you approach God even if it's mechanical. I mean, the saints in India will say, you say to the Divine Mother over and over and over 1,000 times, I love you, I love you, I love you, even though it's a lie. One day the goddess is going to say, I'm tired of hearing this lie, I'm going to make it real, come and love me. So now it's true. This, that does it. So you have, you just, in your own little way, you do what you can to demonstrate sincerity before it actually manifests in your heart.
You know, you have to ask really, what do you want in life? You know, what do you want?
Yeah.
And if you feel like you just want God, then little by little that sort of desire...
Well, absolutely.
Grows.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, one of the... for me, one of the holiest times in my life, and there have been a fair amount of them. I was really lucky. Of course, I suffered enough, but I got good, got a lot of sweetmeats along the way, as you say. But there was a time I was sitting with, I consider, a great saint in India, and it was Mahashivaratri night. All night we had done meditation. There were a couple, this was on the bank of the Narmada River in Gujarat, you know. Really one of the holiest places in the world. You ever been to the Narmada River? They say the Ganga is for purification. The Narmada, that Devi, Narmada Devi, she is for renunciation and just God, saturation in God. She's the only Devi of all the, you know, the mythology of the Hindu gods and goddesses. She's the only one that's not married. She's really like that austere, just real renunciation and just peace. So we're sitting on the bank of the Narmada River, and all Mahashivaratri had gone, and like, it's, the atmosphere is like jello. It's so steep in spirituality. And I'm thinking, just thinking, sitting next to this saint, who spoke very good English, I'm just thinking, why cannot this be more? This feeling? Why is it usually just strife and hardship and struggle? And intermittent spiritual blessedness. Why can't there just like what Yogananda said, just Ramana Maharshi, how come God just doesn't lighten up a little? You know, why is it always just difficult? And so this saint read my mind, and he said, which is the answer to what you just said, he said, the reason is, what we should want, we just don't want. And so a nice prayer would be, oh God, make me want you. You know, you just bear down the truth, and you know, you just kind of like open it up and say, God, I don't care, but I know it's wrong, so make me care.
But it's only the ego that doesn't want God.
Yeah, but you know something? You can call it what you want, but the ego is the court of army. It runs our life. That's why Sri Ramana Maharshi, when he was once asked, what are the obstacles to the realization of the self? What are the obstacles to moksha? What are the obstacles for enlightenment? And he said, the habits of the mind. So, the great Swami Sivananda said the same thing. He said, what produces all the karma, what produces all the strife in our life, are the habits of our mind. You want to be free from karma? Change your habits. So, you have the habit of being a little lazy in the morning, you know better, change that habit. Even if it's just you can get up and you struggle and then you go back and say, you're breaking the habit. This is what catches the heart of God. This is what God wants. He doesn't want our flowers and our fruit and our water and our incense. And frankly, he's not really interested in our I'm thinking of some bad words, but our weak and insipid sincerity. Because he's got people in the world who are ready to give their life, and they have given their life. So our just say, oh God, help me, isn't very pleasing. But when really you demonstrate by repeated effort, make me want you, change me. That's it, to ask for change. To acknowledge the fact, yes, I'm good, but I wish for better. That's why we ask for more. That's why we're sensual creatures. We just want more and more. And the saints will say, don't try to dismantle your desire. Just redirect it. Redirect it to God. So...
can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Because I just have one book from Ananda Maima, and
right.
I have like a little picture, but I have never met somebody who really knew her. Could you share a little bit of your experience with her?
Yes. To some people, Ananda Maima was just cute and beautiful, and they used to comment, you know, how she was just magnificent in her ways. But Mother Ananda Maima used to say, I am a musical instrument. The music you get from me depends on how you play me. The music you want to hear from me, if you want ragtime, just consider me just, you know, a cute little diversion. I'll give you ragtime. I'll say the cute things and I'll be your diversion. But if you want symphony in your life, if you want beauty, you want spiritual greatness, you come to me with that approach. I'll give it to you. But Sri Ananda Maima, she was, they say she was a goddess among us. And Emmanuel, God with man. And so she wept at the state of those who were around her. And she had mercy. She possessed that which was two things. When she loved you with pure, unselfish love. Regardless of what you did or how weak your devotion was, it never diminished her love and care for you. And if you had that questioning and you had that desire for change, that was enough. She took care of everything. She took care of everything. And they say, and I'll know, I can tell you, she did everything. One time we were sitting in Kangkal, which is like a suburb of Hardwar, that place where the Ganga runs. And because we were American and foreign, and the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis and those who were administrating the ashram, she was up in a second room, and they were saying, Mother's giving no darshan. She's not giving any company. So you can just go home. Hey, wait a minute. We came halfway across the world. We spent all our money and mortgaged everything. We want to see her. And this is sorry. And we could see there are these, big babus, rich people going up and down the stairs, and Mother was up there, and you could tell it was all going on. And so finally we just said, listen, we're not taking no for an answer, but we can't do anything because, you know, they called us Malaycha. They called us unclean. We even started to go in Mother's direction. They just stopped it. So we decided to sing a song. We're down in the courtyard, the little Shiva temple there. I can remember the time. And so there's this little bhajan that it goes, Jagannatha Swami, Nayana Patagami, Bhava Tume. It means, O Mother of the Universe, reveal thyself to me. And so she's up there and the window's closed, and we're literally just starting to sing. And we're going, you see, I got a terrible voice. It goes, Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatume. O Mother of the Universe, reveal thyself to me. And we were singing it for only a few minutes. Then all of a sudden we heard a noise. We looked up. Mother had come to the window, thrown the window open, and she got ha ha ha, she started laughing. So the Mother Universe revealed herself to us. And then she called us up, shooed everybody else out of the room, and we sat there with her. And like, she was the mother. She was like touching us. She was, you know, laughing with us. And she was like, and what she did, to really answer your question, not only did she take your doubts away, she took your thoughts away. You sat there in her presence and you had no need for anything. Everything was at peace. Everything was completely perfect and fulfilled. And it was such a degree that literally she would sit and we would notice how uncanny it was. Even her clothes, you know, the voluminous, you know, she would, you know, have upper cloth on, you know, kind of like that, and her hair would be down. Everything was perfect. The very folds in her cloth, the hair, it seemed like everything curled. It was like an icon, an Orthodox icon. It was just perfect. So in that presence, your mind became perfect. And it seeped in. It just seeped in. And then, so what would happen later, all you have to do is think of her. You know, all you have to do is just think of that and she would come to you. There, time and space were no obstacles, no barrier to these great ones. And you just think of them and they're there with you. But what happens is when they approach, you're steeped in that. And then when you're apart and away, then you remember. And you see the beauty of that, you might say, to have that experience, that I experienced that divinity incarnate right in front of me. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the greatest benefit. The greatest benefit is when that became remote and you were back in your awful kind of like fearful and forgetful mind. But then you remembered her and you said, I'm here, she's there. Oh God, Mother, come to me. And so it invoked this yearning. This is what the saints and the masters do to you. They don't bless you and change your life. They'll put this yearning inside of you. They'll put this seed inside of you that you'll literally yearn for God. And it's the distance. Mother Nandamoy used to tell a story that it's also in the Upanishads, but the way she told it, it was a real life story. She said there was this two mountains and a big valley, and there were these two beautiful songbirds, one male, one female, and they were on different peaks. And they were in love with each other, and so they sang beautiful love songs back and forth. They never flew together. They never came and joined. They had complete satisfaction to the utmost fulfillment by simply just calling out and getting a response. So this is what Mother Anandamoy did. She proved to you that if you asked, you received. She was ready to respond instantly at your call. And she removed all doubt. And then she said, and not only to those who saw her, she said, those who remember me, this will be their last life on earth, last incarnation, if you just remember her. And what she was meaning was not, okay, I have her picture and I can look and I know that's Mother. It's that yearning that you created. That's the remembrance. That when you look at that, you realize, this is my mother, who my divine mother, who like, she's my protector. All I have to do is call upon her. And frankly, again, like we said, you have the right to complain. If you know, some of you here are mothers and you have children. If you have a lot of children, which one do you pay the most attention to? The one that's screaming or hollering the most, you know? So be a child of the Divine Mother and make big complaints, loud, often. And you're saying, oh, Mother, you know, I'm forgetting you. And even if you want to get sincere, I don't care. Yes, you're the Mother Divine and this and that, but you know, I got my own troubles, and you know, so leave me alone. That kind of thing catches the mother's heart. Because I'm not going to leave you alone. I created you for this. So this is the kind of, this is what, you get an idea of what she did, but she was so with you. It wasn't like, her care was so sincere. For instance, it's a story, it's an odd story, but it's really true. There was an elderly woman. No, she wasn't elderly, she was middle-aged, but she had children late in life, and she had one son. And the son died from some Indian disease, which, you know, there's a million different varieties of them. In fact, someone once said to me, you know, how can you go to India? There's things there that'll kill you. You'll die from. Like, you can't die from it here, but it's like, you know, it's like a petri dish of bacteria. So this young boy caught some disease and died. And the mother became insane. And she just couldn't stop weeping. And she was beside herself and just insane with grief. So they brought her to Anandamayi Ma. And mother was there. They brought the woman in. And the woman was just crying and just screaming and just out of her mind. Then mother looked at her. And mother started to cry. And mother started to weep inconsolably with this woman. To the point that mother's weeping was so much more profound, so much more engaging, so much more, you know, loud, and her tears were so voluminous compared to the woman. The woman finally, the woman that lost the baby, started trying to console mother and saying, "Mother, it's okay. You know, it's, you know, we do believe he's moved on. It's not death. Please, mother, stop crying, stop crying." And it took a long time to get mother to stop crying. But in the meantime, the miracle of the mother that lost the baby was worked. And this is what they do. So, and the thing is, the fact that you've not met her, it doesn't matter. You read about her. Again, these are why the lives of the saints are so important. You read about the saints, you read the lives, you read the words, and then you start to pray to them. And listen, and like you said, we're in an awful world, and so therefore, how many people are doing this? So you've got mother's pretty much attention, because she's looking at all of her children, and most of us are just ignoring her. Or if we're not ignoring, we're being very righteous, and once or twice a month, we're going, "Oh, mother," you know. Mm-hmm. So that's it. And again, if you feel that she is somehow intuitively, even though you haven't met her, that, which I trust, I believe me, she is, then you make your prayers to her. And that's why I say the mother aspect of God is a much safer approach than the father aspect of God. If you want your heart to be changed and you want to have true devotion, Shiva, the you know, who's sitting there in the Himalayas covered with ashes, pretty unapproachable. He couldn't care less on one level about your, you know, puny little devotion. But when you cry before a mother, she's going to come. And this mother comes. So it's a little bit of, not exactly the answering your question, but it's hard to talk about her because she's more real than our own mother, because she's everything. And, you know, and she's there even when you're not interested, you know. And it's just, she weeps for us. In fact, the great goddess Kuan Yin, you know, the great Bodhisattva Kuan Yin. Her name in Chinese, and we'll make this the end because I know we're getting tired. Her name is Quan Shiyin Pusa. That's the way they say it in Chinese. Pusa means Bodhisattva. Quan Shiyin means she who hears the cries of the world. This is what Anandamayi Ma and others like her. They hear the cries of the world. They're scouring humanity for someone who's crying out to them. And that's day and night, day and night. So may we develop yearning, tears, and before that, may we just, if we have to, just cry out and to say to God, how come I can't cry? How come I don't mean it? Therefore, I'm a real piece of work. Fix me. So may God bless us and keep us. So, yeah. Mother, you're welcome. Oh boy, are you welcome.